Hello?
No. Hi, John. Are you here? He is on. He's on his mic.
Yeah,
mic
I'm
open.
Here. I was just fumbling over to get a hold of that mic, so I'm here.
Welcome back again, John, and thanks for coming on again.
Thanks for having us, and Gerard's on with me also, so he might... Gerard is on also with me, so he might pipe in as we go along.
Okay, I got some things that are leftovers that people have been asking after the fact when they thought about it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things is the same problem that you run up against in terms of people ignoring things or refusal to comply with the legalities they're supposed to comply with. And my main question deals with enforcement of that.
Right. Yeah, that's
and
the
I'm
big question.
That you run as far as you can with that, okay?
Yeah, that's the big question. Everybody has that question, and it's a valid question. But the answer is not simple. I mean, I haven't met many people who have been able to get enforcement in anything they're doing, and I've seen a lot of these different groups trying to get grand juries going, and they could never get any enforcement. They could never get into the – well, I haven't met a group who tried to get into the courthouse. And I think that's one of the major mistakes that they've made, along with some others. But that was, I think, a major mistake. The first order of business is to get a seat in that courthouse. And so you have to be operating from within the courthouse under the auspices of justice, and then you have total authority. At that point, then you have total authority. Any of the people in the courthouse, whatever is said is going to happen, and the judges and sheriffs will all obey. And ultimately, you know, we don't order the sheriffs. We order the court, and the court orders the sheriff. The court must obey. When a paper of any type is put into the file by the grand jury, they have a duty to respond in a way to push that, whatever it is that you're trying to do, a presentment or an information or even an indictment through the state bringing a case before you. In any case, once a paper is placed into that file, then it must go forward for action, and the judge has no decision making on it. He's not the tribunal, and he must sign the paper, and it must move down the corridor, so to speak, or the conveyor belt of time, right up until trial or whatever it is that you're trying to do as a grand jury, or as a jury. But where we're at right now, of course, is trying to get into the court, and we filed, and we have a lot of things to do. We're going down the process and the procedures. People are being disobedient to the filings we've had. We filed five indictments on five judges and one clerk, and now we're about ready to, well, what we did then is we then went and filed our paperwork with the, with the Columbia County county clerk to file a case, and we put up what's called a quo vanto, a writ of quo vanto. I think it's probably our most powerful work to date, and it is available up online, nationalliberty.org, and you click on news, and it should be one of the first items up there. And behind that, we filed what was called a hang on a second, let me get there. Yeah, it is one of the – it's second from the top, actually. Right above that is a writ of prohibition. So we filed we wrote a writ of prohibition. We actually haven't filed that yet. We were going to file that on Wednesday or Thursday as soon as we found out what judge was going to be in charge. And the writ of prohibition would put the judge into the into his place as magistrate. And it was really a warning or a shot across the bow, so to speak. But the quo vanto does the same thing. It's a little more, it's very powerful, I think. And it's a little more, toned down. We make a point about him having to behave, that being the judge. He doesn't get to be the tribunal. As in all common law courts, the judge is never the tribunal. It is always the jury. And even when you go back to... back 1,000 years, 1,500 years ago, when in England and the king would come to make a ruling, he was actually acting as a judge, and he was bringing forth the will of the people. And when he put his stamp on something, you know, if you didn't obey it, you could lose your head, so to speak. But the decision making ultimately, you know, when you read the Supreme Court rulings and you look back into history, you discover that the judge has this entree. So it's a group of people that he calls his judges, and that actually is the jury. The jury has been enforced even before they created the king in England. It goes back even into Germanic tribes and the Anglo-Saxons, which brought this into being in England. So even the king had always had the jury. So we as kings, when we go into court, we always have a jury to do the will of the king, which is us, as long as it's just and right. But ultimately, the jury decides. And of course, if there is no jury, if the other side's brain dead enough not to bring in a jury, then of course you get to decide. But anyway, we are at that point. We filed papers with the court on Monday last week, or this past week, shall I say. And on Wednesday, we received a call from the court clerk that they're returning our papers. And we warned them that that's 20 years in jail if you put it into the mail, because that's fraud. Nobody has the authority to remove a paper filed with an action at law in the court, particularly. I mean, everybody understands that one. And so we went up on Thursday. We decided to go up right to the court itself. We had two original copies that we had taken from, when we filed this. So we had three original copies, one we left with them and two we had. So we have all the stamps and the files and the notes and the receipts and everything else. So we've got the what's called an RJI, a request for a judicial intervention, and an index number. And so all of that has been appropriately done. So obviously there was no failure in form. The form was correct. We've been doing this long enough to know that our form was correct anyway. And there was no reason for them to deny it or try to deny it. So anyway, we went up on Wednesday and we went to see the clerk. Was it Wednesday or Thursday? Let me think. I think it was Thursday. So we went up on Thursday afternoon and we went to see the clerk of the court. And we figured, well, we'll walk it right over to the court. Many a times I've filed cases in the past where, I wanted quick action or something, or I wanted to bring something to the judge's attention, or I just wanted to know who the judge was and get that all going so I can send him something also directly as an individual or a person. And so I've walked it, and especially with election issues, you want to get that moving quick before a judge, and we filed quite a few election issues in the past. So we walked it up to the clerk, as I've done in the past, and they take it, and you get to find out who the judge is, and you go your way, and you're there for the date that's agreed upon. So we did this in Columbia County, and when we went up to the court clerk, we were quite surprised that they refused it, and they should understand the law. So their rejection, and we asked them, well, why would you refuse it? The clerk accepted it. Well, the number's been rescinded. Well, how is it rescinded? How could that possibly be? And they said to us, well, okay, this Judge Prudente, which is the second-in-command Chief Justice of New York, and here in New York in the justice process, the highest administrative judge in New York, second highest, LSA. And they said that we were told by Judge Prudente that we're not to accept anything from you. Well, you can take that, and all of that is illegal, of course, to begin with, but we're talking about a court case that's being filed that has no deficiencies in it. So by what authority are you saying we can't file a court case? And they said, by Judge Prudente. I says, well, by what authority does she act? And, of course, they couldn't tell me. And there is no authority. There is no way on the planet that anybody could be refused here in America, at least up to this point. Soon it may be different, but at least up to this point, they cannot be refused filing a court case. It's unheard of, totally unheard of. And so we informed them of the law that they had to file and so on and so forth. And we were kind of surprised they took that move. But our next move now, of course, is we're writing affidavits, putting together and laying it down very plain language what law has been broken, all the codes. There's lots of codes that have been broken. There's felony rescue involved. There's conspiracy. There's RICO. All can be proven now. We've got plenty of evidence. We've got paper evidence, a whole trail that leads for a whole bunch of people, and particularly all these judges. So we're going down to the sheriff Monday morning with our papers, with the signed affidavits of witnesses to a crime, with all the evidence, and showing the codes by which the sheriff must act upon. And like any other law enforcement agent, when you go file a complaint, it must be acted upon. If you go down and you do a sworn affidavit and said, you know, Joe Schmo punched me in the nose, and you sign that affidavit and it's notarized, and you give it to that that officer, whoever he may be, he is required by law and duty to go out and make that arrest. That person needs to will be arrested. They will be fingerprinted. They will be brought before a magistrate, and they may or may not be let go on their own recognizance, or maybe you know, they put some kind of a, what do you call it, on them, a bond or something. But this is the case with anything. So we're going down to the sheriff. We're going to sit down. We've been educating these sheriffs now for 6 weeks. We've been really sending some long memorandums, trying to explain the system, because all the sheriffs really are very ignorant. Even those who claim to be constitutionalists really don't know the Constitution. And that shows up very quickly once you start to have conversation with them. So we've been schooling them, preparing them for this moment, and we certainly hope that they've been prepared for this moment. And if they do not, if they cannot understand this, or they're afraid, and I think part of it is afraid, too. I think fear for the sheriff to take this big step. Well, he's going to be informed that he now is going to be guilty of felony rescue, failure to do his duty, and he's going to enter into this conspiracy if he rejects or refuses. And we are seeing two sheriffs, because the judges, we're going to have numerous judges arrested, we're going to have numerous clerks arrested, and both of, you know, those judges and clerks are pretty much in Greene County, New York, and Columbia County, New York. We do have one judge, Prudente, who's down in New York City. And since New York City doesn't have a sheriff, we'll have one of our sheriffs up here go down there and arrest her and bring her up for fingerprinting and process. But we're going to demand this. And when that arrest takes place, which should be hopefully tomorrow, but if not the next day, you know, I'm sure they may want to digest this for a while, but they certainly better not be calling any lawyers, because if they do call a lawyer, I'm going to get them for conspiracy. I'm going to let them know, don't even think about calling a lawyer. We'll get a book and figure this out. We'll give you more materials. We'll go through the Constitution. We'll go through the Bill of Rights and the Magna Carta or the Declaration of Independence, common law, or whatever it's necessary for you to learn. But once you go to this ring and you start getting lost in the statutory process, because the Attorney General here and all these lawyers, they're all part of this thing, and they don't want us in there because they're all criminals. But in any event, we believe they'll go forward with this. When they do, we're going to want to be there at the county building with our paperwork, so that when they're arresting them, we'll then put our paperwork down on the counter and look for the next clerk to see if they're going to resist or if they want to be arrested also. And we'll have them arrested right there on that spot. We'll hold back the sheriff to see if they're going to take this paperwork, and we'll tell them we're going to file another complaint against this person. And we'll just have everybody in that building arrested, one after another, until we get the justice and the process of due process through their court system. So that's kind of where we're at. That's the way we're pursuing this. Now, should the sheriffs not act, there is another step we can take, but I'm not going to discuss that.
Right, okay. It seems like you've got all the bases covered, John, which is good.
Yeah, we've thought this out quite some time ago, you know, we've been tweaking it as we've been going, knowing what we're going to have to do. And sometimes, you know, we have plan A and B. Depending on what they do, we'll do B or A or C. But, yeah, we have researched and thought this out very carefully.
Well, it's important you have options. You know, it's not throw all your eggs in one basket. So that's good for the public to hear. You know, we're not you're not going at it single-mindedly. You have options, and if that doesn't work, there's always fallbacks. So that's good to hear for the public. With regard to this, is the common law grand jury linked with the constitutional sheriffs at all? Are any of them linked with the constitutional sheriffs organizations? They number quite a bit now. Hello? You still there, John?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had my mic muted. I was talking. It's a shame that It's a shame that the sheriffs don't understand the Constitution, even those who claim. You know, we started looking throughout the state. We found few sheriffs that claimed to be constitutionalists, and we've seen some videos out there, so we decided to call one or two of them. And we found out that they really didn't understand. They're involved because the people have pushed them into the involvement, particularly here with the gun issue here in New York. But they really don't understand. They're incapable of seeing a law being broken. They can tell when a statute is broken because it's clear, and that's what they've been trained to do. The statute says very clear things, and then they look at that statute and they look at the action. They say that is an infraction, and they can arrest you. And, of course, in most of those cases, all of that is illegal. It's unconstitutional. It violates the people's unalienable rights. They don't really have the authority to do this. But nevertheless, I mean, if they did understand the law, if they really did, we'd be seeing judges go into jail all day long because the bailiff works ultimately as a sheriff of the court. And in some counties, or many counties, the sheriffs actually take over the bailiff's job, so you'll see sheriffs in the court. But the bailiffs, if they knew and understood and the sheriff understood the law, then right in the courthouse, I can think of many a times where that guy should just come right up to the bench and tell the guy, put your hands behind your back and put the bracelets on and take them away, robe and all. But they don't, they're incapable of seeing it. It's like they've been brainwashed not to see that laws are being broken. So that's why we were schooling the sheriffs here in New York for 6 weeks, preparing them for this moment. And we believe some of them are prepared. We had a good conversation with a lieutenant, which I think was an undersheriff, but anyway, he's a lieutenant of the sheriff. He was second in command, and we couldn't get in to see the sheriff. He wasn't available, but he saw us, and we had a very long conversation. We spoke, I think, with this guy over an hour. We shared a lot of material with him. He was very attentive. He was listening, and I can see he understood. We also had some good in the court, when we went to do the court thing, which I just explained down in Columbia County, they called for the police, you know, because they and the cops came in, you know, they were sheriff deputies. I think it was a sergeant that came in, and you know they went into police mode, and but they were listening, and he kind of backed off of police mode and kind of moved them back a little bit and even turned to someone else to talk a little bit. He saw that, I think he saw that we were right and that we were not troublemakers and we're not, you know, crazies or anything. But anyway, when we informed them there that they better obey the law, they decided to take a second hit at this, and they asked us to wait outside, so we waited outside for a good hour. And I'm sure the phones were burning up all over New York with all the judges trying to figure out what to do with us. So we had that opportunity to talk with this sergeant, and this guy understood a lot more than we realized. I mean, he even started talking to us about how he's got certain kinds of weapons and lots of ammo, and he's getting ready for the hard times himself. So it's not that these guys are totally ignorant. They do understand that something is wrong. They do understand that the Republic is about to fall. But I don't know that all of them do. But then to interpret the law, you know, they don't have the necessary prerequisitional thinking in order to prepare themselves to be able to arrest someone when they actually do break the law. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. And there is, again, there is another move we make after this dealing with the sheriff, but I can't talk about it.
Does the refusal to act make them complicit by inaction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It ties them right into the conspiracy. It brings them into what's called felony rescue. It makes them part of the conspiracy. And they all confess. Every one of them confess, well, Judge Prudente said not to do it, so we're going to listen to her. Well, if you want to listen to her, then you're listening to the enemy, then you're part of the conspiracy. Now, we've got this stuff in recordings. We have it in writing. I mean, they're so lawless, and they're so used to doing this in the open, and they've got they're leaving all this evidence behind, and, you know, they got to be having problems sleeping. And, you know, what I'd like to do is I'd like to read this summons we wrote. It's a page, and it's double-spaced, so it's not very long. And the other thing I'd like to read very quickly is what we wrote was a call of writ of prohibition. But let me read the summons, because this gives a little bit of a taste of the authority and the power by which we're coming to the court with and how we plan to operate and run this court. But yeah. Here's the sub.
John, can we do this after the break?
Sure.
I think it would be better to have a flow rather than doing that. And then,
sure, I'll go get a bottle of water.
Okay. And we'll be back in about 8 to 10 minutes, and you can start off with that. Right, a couple of songs now, a break, and this is continuing on the Robin theme, and here's one of her favourite bands.
Muted.
Okay, it looks like we've been muted. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi all, and welcome back to the second hour. That was two of Robin's favourite groups. The first song, Metallica, Hero of the Day. Robin was a hero to many people, and will leave a lasting legacy, none more so than to bereft husband Rick, and our thoughts are with him. The second song, Freebird, the opening line, applies to all. If I leave here tomorrow, will you still remember me? Yes, we will, Robin, from all at Cosmic Voice. Drake, are you there?
I'm John? Muted.
Hi, John.
Hello,
here.
John.
How you doing? Oh, I'm here.
He found a mute
button. Yeah. Do you want to go ahead with what you were about to read before the break, John?
Yeah. There were two papers that I'd like to read, and there's a lot more that people should really consider going up and reading this. And there may be a few things they may not understand, but I think as people read through it, and maybe a second time, they will understand it, because we stay away from as much as we can anything. Well, we stay away from legalese, that's for sure. But we do talk about the things that people do understand, like the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, the Magna Carta, U.S. Supreme Court rulings, and so on. But if they want to look at these documents, they can go to nationallibertyalliance.org, click on News, and again, it's the top two stories there. One was posted Monday, March 24th. That's the Quo Vadis, complete with the summons. It's about 57 pages altogether, I believe. And then the second one you read above it, which we haven't actually served yet because, the case is kind of in limbo until tomorrow. We'll figure out what we'll do. But we do have this other paper to get out called The Writ of Prohibition. And what people need to understand is whenever a writ is done, it's always coming from the king's bench, which means it's coming from the jury, the grand jury or the trial jury. It doesn't emanate from a court, from a judge or anyone. They don't have permission to write such writs. Also, the same thing with a quo vadis. It also only emanates from the king's bench. Only the king can put that out. That's the people. That's we the people. But let's look at the summons. And it's a little different. If anybody who's seen summons before, anybody that's in the court and they know how to write a summons, it's one page, it's very short, and gives the time, the place, and so on. And it doesn't get into too much detail. But we put a little detail in here to make it very specific. And it starts off, you are hereby summoned and required to answer by paper and in person this endorsed summons in New York Supreme Court, Columbia County Courthouse, located at 621 State Street, State Route 23B, Claverack, New York, on the 7th day of April 2014 at 9:30 a.m. Upon your failure to answer, it will be interpreted as contempt of court and an admission of willful intent engaging in criminal activities against the people of New York. An arrest warrant will be issued and judgment will be taken against you for the relief demanded in the Quo Vadis. This common law procedure executed coram nobis, which means by the king themselves, the people themselves. The magistrate has no authority to approve requests for time extensions or postponements of said summons. Grand jurist will be laying aside all business and will be traveling from across the state. Likewise is expected of the accused. This procedure is for a show cause to the criminal allegations presented by the extraordinary writ, Quo Vadis, demanding that the people's steward give account of their stewardship. Therefore, no motions will be considered. Answers are demanded. And then it's signed on behalf of the Unified New York Common Law Grand Jury. And we've got our seal on it. Now, the other paper that I'd like to read, it's even shorter than that. It is the writ of prohibition, and let me open that up. Okay, and this is very, very small on the top right. You know, it's got decreed, and it's got the caption. It's a Supreme Court case, so it's a caption, and we intend on going into the court and taking over the court. As a matter of fact, we're thinking about turning the tables around instead of facing the the judge. We want to face the people because they are the grand jury. Everyone fill in that courtroom. We will fill that courtroom and even come out into the halls and hopefully out the doors. But anyway, writ of prohibition decreed. As is custom in these people's courts of justice, judges, as they have been cunningly educated to perform, illegally initiate equity law in place of common law, which is fraud on the court. Experience has shown that these inferior courts are obstinate in their season of jurisdiction and thereby obstruct justice. Thus, we find it necessary to redress the issue beforehand, preventing the delay of justice by means of this extraordinary writ of prohibition, clearly stating obsta principis against nisi prius. Now, those are Latin words, and obstus principis means withstanding the beginning. And nisi prius is first and less. And anybody who knows and understands the problems of the court and the nisi prius court, and what, if you accept the jurisdiction by pleading or participating, then you first, agreed, unless you resist. And so we're making the point right here. We are resisting any assault upon this common law court. So that's why we wrote these Latin words. So let me pick it up from there. Clearly stating obsta principis against nisi prius. That is to say, we, the jury, resist the first encroachment and proceed according to the supreme common law of the land. Coram nobis means by the people themselves. The judge is not the judge. He is a magistrate. He's like a traffic cop, and that's all he is. The tribunal are the people themselves. They make the decision of the process of this court. Therefore, this superior court of record forbids the inferior court not of record from assuming jurisdiction in this matter over which it has no control or legitimate authority, and its judge is to function as magistrate. See law of the case. We put a 26-page law of the case in there, which details all of the players in the court and what their jobs and roles are, and we get very specifically in what the magistrate can do and what he can't do. Again, signed by order and on behalf of the Unified New York Common Law Grand Jury. So those are two papers. You know, they were short, but I think they're kind of powerful. The quantum in itself is extremely powerful. So people might want to compare it.
Overrides all the legalese rubbish that they've imposed on us. Basically.
Right. We've got a lot of experience in what they've done, so we've kind of neutralized it all right from the beginning.
That's fantastic. Oh, well, we look forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll
give you word on when we're heading into the courts, and maybe you can let the people know, anybody that's local that wants to come down to the courthouse, anybody living in New York or close by, wants to make a travel or whatever, we want to fill this court.
Yes, I'm sure Michelle will be down. Michelle Forrest.
Maybe the best way to go is questions, and I'll give answers, or do you want me to speak about something specific?
Just to harp back to what I mentioned before about the constitutional sheriffs as such. There's an organization, or a specific organization, CSPOA, Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officer Associations. Are you linked in with them people at all?
Well, we're not directly linked. We kind of are careful. We don't really go out seeking things, but people find us, and then we respond to them. And people who are with us, they'll go out and tell the news media this or something that, and then they'll come talk to us because we're so focused on what we're doing. But we have looked into that site. We have looked at some of the sheriffs. We looked at the New York sheriffs. Turns out that the New York sheriff we're going to be talking to tomorrow is listed in there. And a matter of fact, I think there were three New York sheriffs. I think Columbia County Sheriff was listed in there too. But we do know that the sheriff in Chemung County, who is the president of the association here in New York for the Sheriff's Association, and he's the guy that we spoke to recently, and he seemed a little oblivious to what was really going on, but he's the guy that was claimed to be a constitutionalist. He's the guy that we saw on YouTube talking about the rights of the people and how he's going to protect them, and yet he didn't understand, but we did tell him we'd get back to him in a week or so, so maybe Monday or Tuesday we'll give him a call, because he said he was going to bone up on the letters that that we sent. Matter of fact, he claimed he didn't get them, but we know he did.
I think at this stage we're at, it's important for all the light workers and all the the common law grand jury, so all be on the same page, and the militia, and the good military, you know. If the people are all united and stand together, this ends a lot quicker, rather than being divided and split up. We're easier to attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just looking at the constitutional and the peace officers' headline, to equip sheriffs, peace officers and public officials with the necessary information and public support to carry out their duties in accordance with their oath of office. And the last three words are the key to all this,
mm-hmm.
That they have to stand up and abide by what they signed. You know,
well, no doubt about that.
Yeah,
no doubt about that. And we perceive, and again, we kind of got our fingers on the pulse here in New York with the sheriffs and what's going on here, and we kind of perceive that they're frightened. They've been frightened and chilled by the governor here when they were all the sheriffs of New York a couple of months back were called up into Albany, and they thought this was a good thing. They said, wow, the governor's going to talk with us. We're going to be able to voice our opinions and thoughts and so on and so forth. And so they all went up there. All the sheriffs throughout New York went up there into Albany, into the governor's office. And the governor came out and spent all of about 2 minutes with them. And he didn't allow them to speak at all. He just kind of laid down his process and what's going to go on, and they're going to obey, or he's going to remove them from office. And he left. And so that didn't go over very well, but it did chill some of these sheriffs. And I don't know. I'm sure there are some brave sheriffs amongst us. I'm sure there are some sheriffs who got it, who get it. I know that because I've spoke to some officers that are high up in the sheriff, and they do get it. So I know there's got to be sheriffs that get it. And so with that said, we're kind of trusting that God's going to put the right person in the right place at the right time, whenever or wherever that's going to be.
So Andrew, that's Andrew Cuomo, is it?
That's right. Cuomo. Yep.
He's
an elitist son.
Yes. Notice his spouse's wife's maiden name's rather significant. Have you had any interference from the likes of Giuliano or Bloomberg, given your...
Well, you know, both of them guys would never even come near us. They're anti-freedom, they're anti-liberty, so they wouldn't participate with anything we're doing. We haven't confronted with them yet. We don't intend on until we get control. But Bloomberg, I believe, is gone now. They got a new mayor down there now. And Giuliani, I don't know where he's at these days. So, but those guys...
As far away as possible.
Yeah, hopefully. So.
Right, let me see if we've got some questions for you. Later on, and probably in the third hour, we're going to bring one of the members on who has an issue that maybe you could help her with. So that will be an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Before I go ahead, I received some, what's it called, proof of delegation of authority material from some local people dealing with common law grand jury. I posted it on your Skype, so
okay.
I don't know whether you might want to have a look at that.
Right.
Question for John. Read the judge's wet signature. In all common law courts, will judge's wet signature be implemented on all court documents and not rubber stamps?
Well, yeah, we will require that. All of our papers are arrest warrants that we'll have in our back pocket when we go into that courtroom, and also predetermined indictments, depending on the actions of some of these people, we'll have that in our back pocket. They'll all be signed and sealed. Indictments, we don't get a judge's signature, although we do get the judge's approval once we get it into the files. He does have to put a signature on it. And that's the magistrate's job, is really to do the will of the people. And so there will be a place on our paperwork for we will call them honorable. We don't want to really use the word magistrate, and we're definitely not going to use the word judge. But we'll call him honorable because obviously if he signs it, he's an honorable man, and he then deserves the ranking what his rank should be. It's justice. He should be called a justice, and that's what he should be. And a justice is the replacement of the king in England. That's what the justice is supposed to be. And he's the guy with the seal, the final seal, that executes the warrants or whatever has to be done in the courtroom, the judgments and so on. So there will be, and yes, there is no rubber stamping. It's got to be a wedding signature on any document that has any authority that is executed.
Right, okay, thanks for that, John. Since you and Drake have said that you're now going to move with the arrests, wouldn't it be beneficial to have camera people to get these historic events on video?
Yeah, we will try to do that. As a matter of fact, we do have a crew. They run their own station. Trying to think what they call it. They're alternative news, but they have all the equipment. They do their own videotaping, film, and they, of course, they put it on their TV stations. We have people down in New York City, quite a few people, producers down there, and we have one up in Woodstock. It's a couple that's doing it. And so we'll probably give them a call when we know the arrests are going to take place and have them come up with cameras and you know, videotape the action process.
It covers all the people involved as well, so there's no mm-hmm. nonsense going on.
Exactly.
Where does the well-regulated militia fit into all of this in respect of common law grand jury, or do they?
Well, that's a good question. I wouldn't. We want to be very careful when we talk about the militia, bringing the militia in for enforcement. I would prefer bringing the marshal in before I would do the militia, but of course the marshal, there's a couple of things about the marshal, you know, they're the enemy also to some degree, but on the one hand, but the other hand, they understand the law and sometimes they have to react. And I've been in federal courtrooms where, believe me, they reacted the right way. So, because the process we put upon them. But when it comes to the militia, the militia is really the last action, I think, when you really can't get any further. And it is at that point, then we would think about talking about them. But I would think, really, when they come out after us, and they are coming out after us, there's no doubt about that. I mean, never before have the people been disarmed and they didn't come out, and they're trying like hell to do that. They're working overtime right here in New York. They're also down in over in Connecticut. They're really pushing very hard to remove guns. And I heard also out in, I'm not sure whether it was state of Washington or Oregon, they're really working overtime. And I'm sure in a lot of places, but those places particularly, there's some real action going on. And here in New York with the SAFE Act, and they're taking away the control of the permits for pistols, pistol permits, away from the sheriffs. And they, matter of fact, they're setting the computers up as we speak over in the state police, and they're going to be taking it over. And after that determination was made, and I don't even know if that was legislated determination, but in any event, after that determination was made some months back, the superintendent of the state police, which is the highest ranking police officer of the state police here in New York, and he is appointed directly by the governor himself. And he came on to a news briefing, and he said quite clearly that if the governor asks him to remove guns from the people, he will order his officers to go out and remove those guns. But we have spoke with other cops who said they won't obey that order, even state cops, state police. So, you know, there's going to still be some resistance here. But the point is, if they came and removed our guns, it is all over for us. History has shown they always, let me repeat that, always, not most of the time, not some of the time, they always come out and start killing people after that. This government has no goodwill towards we the people. And it's not really the government. We have no problems with the government. The government is fine. The courts are fine. The procedures, the process, everything's fine. It's the enemies that have infiltrated our government and have taken control of the controls. That's the problem. And that's the people. We get them arrested and dealt with. We'll be right back to order again. We'll have to deal with all of this unconstitutional legislation that's all over the place, but that's not a problem to deal with, really. And we can do jury nullification and all that and force the legislators in the Senate to clean that mess up and get rid of all that stuff.
Right. Next question. Will extremely unethical, immoral business practices of banks, energy companies, and other corporations lead to the business losing their patents or forfeiture of assets to cover damages? Are these the type of punishments that we may see in the near future other than jail time?
I can't speak about that right now. Think of the best situation for us and the worst for them. I don't want to say no more.
Fair enough. Is Washington, D.C., its own nation, owned by a private foreign corporation?
No. What they have done is this, is we have a trust. Even the United States is a trust. It is not a corporated trust. It's just a trust. It's a common law trust. And what they have done is they came in with their corporate trust and laid them over our common law trusts, and all they did is flip the shingle. You know, like, for instance, New York State, they flipped the shingle and called it the State of New York, so that's the corporation. Same thing with the counties, the towns, and everything else. So they kind of just overlaid this corporation over our trust. And as time went on, they started to take more and more control, and control of our structures, control of our process and procedures, control of our elected individuals and everything else. Now, ultimately, everyone is voted in by the people, but they're controlled by the corporation. Take down the corporation, and you have the people back. That's why some people say we need to build courthouses and go in and create common law and go through that process. But no. We paid for those brick-and-mortar buildings. Those are our brick-and-mortar buildings. These parasites came into our government and created a system with the bankers to take over this whole process and fleece the people and eventually slaughter us. They're just sick people who want to take over the world. And so all we need to do is go back in, we the people. That's what we're, if the people don't stand up now, you don't get a second chance. Now is the time to stand. NationalLibertyAlliance.org. But the bottom line, if the people do not stand up now and take it back, then we're going to lose it. But once we take it back, the fiction falls apart, and lo and behold, there's our government underneath it, and we will execute it and bring it back in to give it, we'll restore it.
Yes,
and it's restored very simple, right from the courthouses.
It's time to stand up, everybody. I know a lot of people on our page are helping the best they can.
Right. Well, we get a lot of people. Whenever we come on your show, we get a big burst in membership and a lot of extra hits for a day or two after. So we appreciate the work you've been doing here and others to really build up this kind of a process and teaching the people about the problems and giving them different things that they can possibly do. So these people are all primed that seem to listen to you, and they're ready to react, and they have been. So we thank everybody who listens to your show and participates, and you too. We appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's all about standing up together. You know, I said before, the more that get involved, the quicker we get this done. And the quicker we get our lives back, and we're not struggling with strife, struggling losing homes, and not having choices either eat or heat, you know, and all this rubbish. And never mind all the chemtrails and the water fluoridation and the vaccines, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know.
Right. And we can fix a lot of this very quick once we're in. And I do want to mention one other thing. You know, we've gotten a lot of calls over the past, I don't know, month or so. Three weeks or so, from people from other countries. We've got people from the UK calling us, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. And we even got a call from some country in Africa, and all of which that want to participate with what we're doing. Most of the countries that have called us already common law. But you know what? When people want common law, they just step up and take it because it's an unalienable right. It's just a matter of the people taking it up and fighting for it. So we'll work with any country that wants to do this. It's kind of a little overwhelming, to some of the things going on right now for us, but we are trying to get back to a lot of these people, and we are trying to adjust our website to receive people from other countries. And we set up the most of these countries that are common law are set up already with counties, broken up in counties or boroughs or things of that nature. And so we can really kind of, bring them in and sew them into our site without any disruption. And pretty much common law is common law. I mean, they can use everything on our site, and most of these countries work particularly with the Magna Carta, but so do we. We lean very heavily on the Magna Carta and the history of the grand jury and the jury itself. So, again, that's something I think came from your site, because I know you reach out on a pretty wide, geographical area.
I know... I think I know who the New Zealand one was. He sent that. He contacted me, and I sent it along. So, yeah, it's heartening to see. You know, it's not just happening in the U.S. You know, we're being supported by many all over the world. Who said enough is enough, and we're prepared to stand up and fight back.
Right.
You know, it's we the people who have got ourselves, I know a lot of people don't like this, but it's we the people who have got ourselves into this mess by not educating ourselves enough and allowing others to control us for far too long. And as much as we got ourselves into this mess, we can just as well get ourselves out of it by standing
right.
up. Yeah.
Well, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. So education is the solution. Thomas Jefferson has said that very clearly, that education is the solution. He said educate and inform the whole mass of people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. And he also went on and said that I know of no safer depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true correctiveness of abuses of constitutional power. And that is precisely why we put together NationalLibertyAlliance.org. We have all kinds of courses and essays on liberty and different subject matters that all pertain to what we're doing. And I don't know, last time we were on the show, I don't think we had any states that had already constituted every county. So let me just really quickly go through that. We have 6 states in the United States now that have constituted every single county. One of them, obviously, is New York. We've got all 62 counties. Florida, with 67 counties, all constituted. Connecticut, Rhode Island, New Jersey, and New Hampshire. Matter of fact, New Hampshire was just finished off this weekend. So those are states that have fully constituted counties. Maryland is looking to move over very quickly. They're probably weeks away from being totally constituted. Pennsylvania is almost on the halfway mark, and we're trying to push them along, so they should be coming along very soon. But we do anticipate in the next, I'd say at the most 60 days, 45 days probably, we should have more than half the states constituted. That means every single county in those states. And within the next 3 to 4 months, we feel pretty confident to say we will probably have, if not everyone, very close to all 3,142 counties here in the United States, which would make the entire nation common law and banging on the doors of justice to come in. We got the logs out ready to take the doors down.
The key to it all, John, as you will know, is the domino effect, isn't it? Once the first one goes down,
that's right.
Everything escalates after that. You know,
that's
it's
right.
A runaway train. You know.
That's right, and Florida's doing the very same thing. They're doing it a little different than us, and only because who came against them. You know, when we came to get into the access of the courts, immediately the judges came out against us, and they started to become a barrier from us to get in. And this judge was really dumb enough to write a letter the way she did, and she showed that it's a conspiracy just right off the bat. But also down in Florida, they're doing it a little differently because it's the commissioners that are preventing them from getting in. So they're going after the commissioners, and they are planning a similar thing that we're doing also through the courts and with a Quanto and that kind of thing also. So, but yeah, once one of these states get in, then it will be a domino effect. It'll really be a springboard for every other state across the nation.
Good. Look forward to that day. Do the laws written and approved by Washington, D.C. apply to the Republic, we the people, or have we been totally brainwashed?
Yeah, we've been pretty much brainwashed on that, as is, of course, our police forces, and even the sheriff, you know, which is the sheriff is the only legal cop in the state and throughout the nation anyway, that and marshals. But any law that tries to control the behavior of one of the people is no law at all, and that's the key. The legislation is proper when they make codes and statutes, as long as the codes and statutes are constitutional. And the Constitution is very clear. The codes and statutes particularly are written up for commercial activities and also for the as sort of policies and procedures for those who are in government, in other words, our servants. So these statutes are written for bureaucrats, for the elected individuals, all of the judges, or all of the people elected. That's what and commissioners, appointed people, that's what the statutes are for. And so there are U.S. codes that say that this is what you have to do, and you have to obey this law. And if you don't, then there's a penalty. In certain cases, it's a jail penalty and a fine penalty. Now, there are also rules that they've made up in order to control things that they shouldn't be controlling as their policies and procedures. And, of course, that is all unconstitutional. It is null and void. According to Marbury versus Madison. And of course, the Supremacy Clause of the United States, which is, what is that, Article 6, Clause 2. And so, any law out there that tries to control the behavior of people is null and void. You can't write a law requiring people to be licensed, for instance, in order to exercise their liberties. To drive a vehicle, to carry a weapon, to get up and speak. You can't pass out permits for that. That's unconstitutional. Because once they do that, they can either give them or not give them. And of course, that's where we're at. We're very close to losing it all.
Yes. All right. Next question. This will be an interesting one. There's too many people seem to think on the lines of little me, I can't do much, and this person's asking you, John, are there jobs that need to be done other than being an organizer or a juror? I'm 70 years of age, and I have some trouble with my memory these days, but I still want to be involved. How can I be of help?
Absolutely, yes. We need 4 administrators for every single county. And those are paid positions once we get in. People are being paid right now to administer to these juries, both grand and also trial juries. In New York, they give so much money to the court system in order to administrate to the trial juries, and then they give so much money to the prosecutors to administrate to the grand jury. And through those administrations, they have total control over them. They do psychological papers on these people. They have them questions, and they decide who's going to serve or not. So they actually quiz them, and therefore they're going to get their will done, and that's why in most cases that go to court, the people lose. But we're taking that over, and we're modeling the idea of a number 4 right from the Magna Carta, because the Magna Carta says that if there is a problem, anybody whose rights or homes or property was taken away from them, suffering some kind of a violation, particularly from the government, that the 4... coming out of the grand jury, the 4 would go out and try to mend that problem. And if they can't mend that problem, and give a prescription to fix it, then they come back to the 25, and then the 25 will work towards solving that. And if they can't solve it, they'll investigate it. And if they can't solve it, if it warrants so, they will then send it into the courts, and then the trial jury will make the final decision on that. And that's the process and the procedures. But we need to train the people up that come in. A jury comes out of a pool. There's no question here to be asked for anyone. I think the only question we may have to ask them is if they're in an elected position, they can't serve, and if they're an officer of the law, they can't serve. That may, you know, I think that would probably be appropriate. We've got to think about that one. But in any event, very few things. Other than that, we don't need to ask people questions. It's supposed to be random. It's supposed to be out of a pool. That's what history shows. And so you get a real good, selection of the people from, the neighborhood, so to speak. And so someone has to go through the process of getting these people together, and then we have to give them an orientation. We get to spend a day with them to talk about what they're about to do, that they're going to be judging another human being. This is very serious business. There's no politics to play here. There is no agendas to be played here. We teach everyone, and this is what the administrators have got to learn so that they can teach to the people, that we're coming into this with a sense of honor, a sense of justice, and a sense of mercy. And this here is the mindset by which we are to operate. And if we all make our decision-making on a point-by-point basis with those three principles, then we know at the end of the day we've made the best decisions we possibly can. We've considered the honor, we're honorable people, we've considered what is just, and we've considered what is merciful, and we tried to do the honorable thing, and we're all good. We're good with ourselves, we're good with God, and we're good with the people. And so that's the principles we're setting. And also we have two really guiding maxims. One is, and I've repeated them on the show before, one is in order for there to be a crime, there must be an injured party. And so you have to seek out an injured party. If there's no injured party, there is no crime. And the government cannot be the injured party. The second and most important maxim is that for every injury, there must be a remedy. We don't look at the criminal. We look at the injured party. What can we do? And this is what history shows us what was done also. What can we do to fix this person that has been injured? How can we restore this person? What needs to be done? And, of course, the person who injured them, therein is their punishment. They have to pay restitution. They have to make restitution for that person they injured. And that is justice. That's what common law is all about. And so, we need lots of people. We need across the nation, we've got about 3,000 counties. And we need four for each, so we need about 12,000 people looking for professional work to take these positions. But they have to, and they're going to take, in order to take these positions, and anybody who comes in as a jurist, they need to take an oath to the, and our oath is not a constitutional oath. You know, we the people ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America, so we're above the Constitution. That oath or the Constitution is for those below the Constitution. In other words, our servant government. They have to take an oath to the Constitution. We take our oath directly to the governor of the universe, and we swear to the governor of the universe our oath that we will be obedient to the principles and the two major maxims that will guide us. And so if you have 25 people come together as a grand jury, and you have someone in there that is, really giving everyone a hard time, or they're not holding up the principles, and the 24 people can decide if they can't fix that person and make them think straight, so to speak, the 24 can throw that 25th person out. And they can whittle all the way down to 12, but continue up to, at least to that point. I doubt we'd have that many troublemakers. But also in the trial jury, they have the same thing. They come in, 12 people come in with two spare wheels, so you actually have 14 people who listen to the case. Should one get ill or something happen, or they're really just prejudiced or something, and the other juries realize it, they can kick them off. And they replace it with one of the spare wheels, one of the two other individuals. So there are kind of some things we can do to prevent, people from coming in and disturbing the process for whatever reasons that might be for. In order for them to be righteous, in order for them to know and understand the process and the procedure, and for them to understand the principles, which isn't a lot, you know, it could be delivered to them in one day. You spend 6 or 8 hours with them, and they're ready to serve. And in order for them to be reflecting that which is correct and right and just, well, obviously the four administrators for each county would have to act under the same principles. So we're looking for people willing to take on those principles, step up, do the right thing, and take that authority as time goes on. Those are paid positions.
Regardless whether they're paid or not, there is support positions that people who can't be at organizations or juries can fill in with, help out with.
Well, absolutely. We have people who want to participate with investigations and do certain things, but they also don't want to give up their business. So, you know, they can come in on a voluntary basis. But there needs to be four individuals that are full-time. And obviously they have to feed their family and pay for their own home and so on. So it has to be paid. And instead of the money going to the courts and to the prosecutors, well, that money would come to us, and then we'd be accountable for that, and I'm sure we'd spend it a lot better than they ever did, and I bet you our budget would be far less than half of what they're spending out right now.
Yeah. So to the person who asked that question, just go and ask or locate your local grand jury and offer them some help. You know,
right. All they have to do is go up to nationallibertyalliance.org, and you go to contacts. And when you highlight contacts, you'll see a drop-down box come, and you'll see state coordinators or county organizers. Click on the county organizers and find the people in your county. Find the people in counties next door to you. Communicate with them. Become involved. Go to the state coordinators. Some states have more than one coordinator. Call those people, become involved. If you want to work with them as a county coordinator or a state coordinator, let them know and participate. And you know, anybody can do this. It's all about organizing and all about and training. You know, we're learning and of what common law is really all about. And the cream of the crop out of those people will become to take those positions as administrators, which again is a full-time job, four per county.
Yeah, well, you know. For all the frontline people, you always need support. Remember that. The support plays just as much of a role. It's replicated on this show. I can't do this radio show without the support of my admins. So everyone plays the role in it. So don't think, I'm incapable. You're just as capable of doing something that's just as important as, if it's just supporting the frontline people, that is just as valid.
Well, let me make one more point about that. You know, the four administrators are the investigative body for the grand jury. So they get to go out and investigate any problems and situations. Sometimes just over the phone they can deal with a problem and fix it. But also, we're all owners of this country. Any group of people, okay, that have been investigating anything, they know about things going on, and they want to address the grand jury about an issue, they only need to come to the administrators within the county and let them know, hey, we've got this situation, we've been looking at it for a long time, we know some law breaking going on, we'd like to fix it. Well, we would talk to them about our principles and everything, and maybe we'd send one of our administrators out with them, maybe not, depending on how astute they were. But we would be able to open the doors for them to go in and do a complete investigation on what they've ever already started. We'd make the phone call and get them access into government offices to let them know, hey, people are sending an investigative body down there, cooperate. And so they'd be able to go down there and talk to people, investigate, and collect data and information and evidence. And then they get to write the prescription, okay, and on what these people have to do to fix it. And if they don't, then they get the opportunity to bring it before the full grand jury to tell the story concerning the violation of law that these people refuse to fix or obey. And so all the people working, anybody can do this and volunteer and go to their local county and do these things. But there'll always be four people that have got to be there to maintain this structure and keep things going and teach people, orientate them, and bring them to orientation and so on.
Yes. All right. Next question. Is there one or two questions one could ask a sheriff to know if he or she stands with the people?
Well, it's a good question. You know, I guess the best thing to do, if you really wanted to know the answer to these things, is ask them to tell you about the Second Amendment or the Fifth Amendment. You know, quiz them on the most important thing to we the people is the Bill of Rights. You know, the Constitution, the body of the Constitution, and the Bill of Rights, of course, is part of the Constitution, but the body of the Constitution with the articles, that's telling the government exactly what they can do. Anything outside of that criteria, they cannot do it, okay?
Yes.
Did we get lost? Because I just saw a sign come up. Okay, I guess we're still on, right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's the body of the Constitution. Now, the Bill of Rights, okay, that was written to tell the government what they cannot do. And they cannot do these things, you know. The Congress shall make no law. And that's how it starts off, okay? And it gets into the major parts of our freedom. And they did a pretty good job with such a small document to define so much of our freedom. And so Congress shall make no law ultimately to control the behavior of any of the people. Bad behavior bad behavior that injures somebody is a crime. But bad behavior is not necessarily a crime. As long as you're not doing certain things in public, maybe lewd acts or something, or corrupting the morals of a minor, or things of that nature, whatever you decide to do, and it may be bad behavior, the government has no business in it. That's for the people to fix their own behavior. And society in itself will fix that as time goes on. People will be shunned. People will feel guilty, you know. People will find their own correction. And we have the opportunity to fix our schools and train up our children the way they should be. And we can make them good moral people and participate in society.
Right, okay. Next question. We've kind of covered this before. Well, I'll ask the question for the benefit of the member. What has been done and has been done by the National Liberty Alliance to reach out to all law enforcement nationwide, good guys in the FBI, CIA, ATF agents, SWAT agents, constitutional sheriffs, peace officers, military and militia, and I'll take a deep breath, and as many of the federal and state marshals as possible to help build the enforcement wing to start taking action?
Yeah, we're doing very minimum thing there because they really all those law enforcement agencies they immediately see us as terrorists because they see the word sovereign and all of a sudden we become the sovereign citizens and they have that thing that happened back in 2010 where a couple of police officers were shot and killed, well, one was shot and killed, I believe. It's a father and son thing, and now they've used that opportunity to anybody who uses the word sovereign to make them a sovereign citizen. We've had three visits from the FBI, and in each case, that's how they started off their conversation with us about the sovereign citizen. We know that the police magazines that go out talk about the sovereign citizens all the time. They're priming them. And that's why we decided, well, we needed to communicate with the only law enforcement agent in the state is a sheriff. Anything, you know, all the other police forces, they're all corporation police. They don't belong there. They have no real authority. They can't arrest people. They could do a citizen's arrest, but they better arrest for a real purpose and not for these make-believe crimes and where they fleece the people for money and even throw people in jail to make money off them in jail or take people's children away and all those other things. But we have the sheriffs. That's the ones that we're focusing in on. Those are the ones that could protect us. Because every county has a sheriff, or they should. There are a few counties that don't, but we'll fix that. But every county has a sheriff, generally speaking. And if we get the cops in, those guys are the top cops. And if they protect and the people and protect the Constitution and do their job, then the whole nation will be safe. The only other ones above that are the marshals. We have not communicated with them yet, but we may start soon.
Right, okay. We're at the top of the hour again. That hour went very quickly. We're going to have a couple of songs, and we'll be right back with John and Drake for the final hour. These next two songs are also going out to Robin Light.
Muted.
Thank you.
Hi all, and welcome back to the final hour. That was two more songs going out to Robin Light, On the Wings of an Angel, where we all hope she is, and I'm sure she is. And the second one's one of her favourite bands, Led Zeppelin. I'm sure she's headbanging and watching us at this moment. I hope she enjoyed them two songs. Right, on we go with the show. Drake back, and John.
Yes.
Right, do you want to say anything quickly, or should we go straight into the questions, John?
No, we go straight into the questions, I think.
We're going to have one of our members come on, who's going to ask a very relevant question. It's a personal one for her, and hopefully it will highlight this issue and the ways people can go about it. But question, this is a comment for John. We arranged yesterday to make our presentation for the 3rd of May for the three most populated counties in Oregon, those in the Portland metro area. So they're ready to go as well.
Great.
John, is there a recommended source or sources of reading in the UK for looking into how common law would operate there?
Absolutely. Our website, common law is the same everywhere. And so, you know, if they come to the website, we have a tab called Courses and Essays. And pretty much everything in there is relevant. I mean, we have American history lectures in there, and that could be relevant, too. Bear in mind, you know, common law is common law. You know, our Declaration of Independence was a common law document, although all of England did not go along, of course, with the Americas. But the bottom line is that the essence of the Declaration of Independence surely can be appreciated by them today. And pretty much any common law country. And our Bill of Rights, again, our Bill of Rights don't give us rights. They just list out the things for the government that they cannot do. You know, if they want to know what my rights are, it's very simple for them to find out. They just have to ask me. And if they start to move towards violating any of my unalienable rights, I'll just tell them and let them know and fix it. And we don't have a problem then. Because your rights are whatever you say they are. You get to control your own life. Now, we have court access course, which, you know, I would presume the court access in any of these other, you know, common law nations or countries is pretty similar to ours, so I'm sure there's a benefit. A motion is a motion. A summons is a summons. You know, these courses, this course was written, put together by, well, it wasn't written. The course that I had learned from was put together by a lawyer, and I kind of went with a lot of the things that they, for the process, I put a book together for the purpose of people getting a free book to begin with, but also just the basic process on how to write a case and, you know, what the paperwork is involved. And again, in other countries it may be a little different, but I think it would be close. It could be helpful. But when you get to trial, we have a trial by jury essay, which is really a history of the common law, period, and the grand jury and where it came from and how long it's been around. It's been around for thousands of years, ultimately. And you could trace it through here, through this. It's traced out through this trial by jury. And we have both that in writing. We've got the book up there. It's a free book. And also we have the also an audio, and it's like 15 hours in audio, so you could sit back and listen to it. We also have, and we're building upon this right now, we do have a lot of books up here. The books we have, we're now doing the audio up there. We've got Thomas Hobbes up there, and of course, you know, he's a 17th century scholar. And these are the people that we've learned a lot about common law from. Our founding fathers clearly read their work, and so do, I'm sure, many of the people throughout many of the common law countries. So we have a lot of those books up there by different individuals. We have Spinoza. I'm just putting Spinoza up right now as we speak. We do have all the books up, but we're putting the audio now. And it's really convenient to get the audio, stick it in your MP3 player, and when you're driving, you know, you can plug it into your car, or if you're doing exercise or whatever. You know, whenever you listen to MP3, you can be listening to these things. But that definitely, all of these is an education. It's all about common law. And we have Bill Thornton. We have common law lectures. Bill Thornton gives these lectures. Another guy, Carl Miller. We've got about 6 or 8 hours of his stuff up there. And some other things that all, again, all of this is works with any common law country. We do have all, we're in the process of putting all of the state constitutions up there. I did get the UK constitution, and I'm going to post that up there, and other countries that want to participate with us will post it up. And we are trying to make the accommodations for those other countries as quick as possible. It's really about money, so we're trying to collect some money to get this going and make the changes on the website to get these other countries in. Yeah, almost everything on our website is suitable for any common law country. There's a few things that may not be, but you know what? Common law is common law, and if it's written in our Constitution here and it's written in the Constitution there, it's still the same thing. It's common law. It's appreciating and interpreting what common law is. So it all works.
All right, okay. We're going to bring one of the Cosmic Voice members on now. She's got some question for you and requires some help. It plays into this. Her name is Luna Lisa, as we know her on the page, and I'll just bring her on. Hi, Luna.
How you doing,
Hi,
Luna?
Hi, Thomas. Hi, John. Hi, Drake. Thank you so much. This is so exciting.
Oh, good. Well, I was going to preface what has gone on, but I'll leave that to you. You'll probably be better to explain it.
Hi, John. My house is foreclosed on, and now they're trying to evict me, and I have a summons, and I don't have a job, so I basically have no money to fight or get lawyers if I could even find one. I need a way to stop this eviction now.
Well, if you find a lawyer, they're not going to help anyway because there's nothing they could do. They're part of the problem. Do you know anything about law or procedure or process or anything?
Next to nothing.
Okay. Well, it's going to be difficult, but, you know, when I did a course called Jurisdictionary, and I think it's kind of, you could probably figure it's a 3-month course, but, you know, if you really put 24/7 into it, so to speak, you could do it in 3 days. I did it over the weekend because I was in the middle of a case. Our first case, we didn't even know what we were doing, and we went into the courts. They threw us out within 3 days, and we were back in a couple of weeks later. We did a crash course on jurisdiction, like I said, just to learn the process. And we were just dabbling in the common law at that time, so we really didn't know a lot about it yet. What I can steer you to is go to our course, Courses and Essays, on our page, nationallibertyalliance.org. And what you want to do is really, there are two places you want to focus your time in. Common law lectures. We have about, by a guy named Bill Thornton, it's probably about 38, 40 hours altogether. Let me think, 7, 14, 21, 28. Yeah, it's probably about 32 hours altogether. So if you listen to those lectures over and over a few times, you'll get a really good kind of rounded understanding of common law. Then if you go to the other tab that says Court Access Course, okay, and that you should be able to breeze through relatively quickly. It gives you, you know, it lays out the anatomy of a court case, lays out the procedures, the processes, you know, as far as the paperwork to go, how to write a summons, how to make a motion, you know, how to do all the things, how to write a complaint. And then we also have law notes, which is very important to just go through. You'll learn your rights just by reading the law notes. And then some landmarks of Supreme Court cases, which when you get the time, you might want to go back and read them. They're very important cases. But with that kind of an information, now you have a pretty good grip or understanding on how things work. Now, there is one other page. There's one other page, okay. And that is Court Case Examples. Now, there is a paper there. We do have a framework of a paper called Arrest of Judgment. And we've already done, we wrote this just recently, And we've already won one case. We're in the middle of doing two more cases with arrest of judgments. And it works pretty good because really you're going into the court telling them that they hijacked you into a foreign court and that there was fraud on the court. And you sue the judge, you sue the lawyers, and you use the same index number and you write it up the right way. You turn yourself into the plaintiff now because they're, first of all, they're a fictitious corporation. A couple of things you have to realize. And we're working on a paper on this, and hopefully in the next couple of weeks, you know, I may have it. You can give me a call. My phone number is out there. But
unfortunately, John, Luna, Lisa has only got 10 days.
Okay. Well, I would get out. I would get out right away and arrest the judgment.
Yeah.
Arrest the judgment. Spend a couple of days going through the material I just said. Then take the arrest of judgment and just change it over to your information. You file that paper. That gives you another 30 days, and you should be able to stop everything with that. Then by the time you get through that that time period, I'm sure we'll have a paper written up that we'll share with you. And that paper really lays out all of the illegalities that they operate on. First of all, a corporation cannot sue. The corporation is a fiction, and a fiction cannot sue flesh and blood. Once you move this on to the common law side of the court, and you really hold hold on to the court, make sure it stays in the common law, which I can tell you some things about that if you give me a call in a week or so, or even a few days. But the thing is the fiction cannot sue a human being, number one. Number two, when you went out, and this is the big, big secret, when you went out and got this mortgage in the beginning, within 72 hours, they went to the Federal Reserve window, and they pulled off out of your CESQ funds monies for this process. It's already been paid off, and that's another fraud on the court. And again, you know, I'm kind of learning a little bit about that, and we'll get that written up right, too. Now, also, they always come into court, and this is part one of the things you can arrest the judgment with, is that they don't have an affidavit. They never have an affidavit. They may have things that look like an affidavit, or they may have a lawyer try to make a claim of an affidavit, which is no affidavit. It's an affirmation by the lawyer, who's a third party, and is not a witness. He can't witness in the court. So the fact of the matter that they didn't come up with an affidavit, that gives them no subject matter jurisdiction. And you can have every case thrown out real quick with that, too. They also don't have personam jurisdiction because they took you into a statutory court, which was a fraud, and that's why you're going back for the arrest of judgment for fraud on a court. Now, I know this is a lot of information, but if you go back and re-listen to this later and just go step by step with this information I gave you, you can get through the case. But the real powerful stuff will come in your second paper, and hopefully we'll have that written before you get to that need of that second paper. So that's
John,
the best I could do for you. Yeah.
I've dealt with a lot of this debt collector and third-party issues, and one of the things that came up was within foreclosure is that, first of all, no third party has standing. That's been ruled in several cases. The second part of this is really neat. If they do not have the original title proving ownership, they do not have the right of presentment in the court because they have no evidence of ownership nor the right to foreclose. Usually it's written in the defendant's favor at that point, and the plaintiff may at the same time request from the court punitive damages by clear title to the house. This has been happening more and more regularly as this goes on.
Yeah, and there's more than that. There's a whole list of things you could do here. You know, there's also the fact that they probably could never find a wedding contract, number one. Also, most of these mortgages have been sold or moved to other corporations, other people, and once that happens, they don't have a contract with you, so it's all over. But the most powerful one is the fact that they've been paid 72 hours after they initiated your contract. And your contract, when you signed that paper, you were just signing off the necessary paperwork, really, to have the monies released from your CESQ fund for the process of buying the house. So you've already paid that off. Okay, so all of that, once you start bringing this into court and you start laying this out, Believe me, they want to shut the case down and get it out of here because they don't want this to really be, they don't want this to be around, and they clearly don't want it into any kind of an appeals court system. But with common law, if it's your court and it is your court and they're a foreign entity and lawyer and they're also lawyers, they have no standing at all in a common law court, so you get to actually rule at the end of the game. They don't even have the opportunity to get themselves a jury because they're a fiction. They're not real. They have no unalienable rights. So you could do what you will at the end of the case. So you can win all of these cases if you know how to battle them. And the key thing is to battle against the first order of business when I walk into a court is to establish the jurisdiction. And you don't go anywhere until you establish that jurisdiction. We're in a common law court. And you write your papers properly. We did that on this case that is an example. You write your papers properly. You go in there. First order of business is you talk with the judge about the fact that, you know, look at right here. I opened this case in this court of record. We're suing this. And you go to page 2 or 3, and you see here court of record proceeds according to common law. We have all these memorandums to support all this. And the other side have not, complained about it. They're good, you know. They've acquiesced by being silent, so they're good with it. And why are we here in a statutory process? This is a foreign court. Judge, tell me, what jurisdiction do you think we're under? Now, he won't answer that question, and you got to push that a couple of times to get that answer. And if he doesn't answer, you got to object to everything. Before you leave the court, you definitely want to make stand up and say, hey, on and for the record, let it be known that the judge refuses to answer. He has a duty to speak, and he refuses the answer. So therefore, here again is more fraud in the court or the fact that he's acquiesced to what what he's actually doing. In other words, he's committing a crime. So you could always leave the court at that point, write a writ of error, send that in, then write another paper adding him and all the other officers of the court. That would be, you can even add the bailiff to that, because he should know what's going on. He should have arrested the judge, but he didn't, but he doesn't know any better. You can let him go later, but you should add him. And you go for all the lawyers, because they're officers of the court, they all took oaths. And so you add them all to your defendants list. So you've got 3 more people. You can sue them all for $50,000 apiece for every unalienable right each and every one of them committed against you. Violated against you, and you move on. The next time you go into that courtroom, there'll be another judge up on that bench, and you've muzzled everybody, and you prevented the steamroller from turning on.
Right. I've put a number of notes on your PM, Luna Lisa, for the documents that you will require. Anything else you want to ask?
I can't print all this stuff. I do not have a printer.
Yeah, well, what you could do is this. This is what you could do. You save everything to your computer, and you put it on a USB, thumb drive, okay? And when you want to get something printed out, once you've perfected whatever you need, you can then take it down to Staples or some other print place, and they'll print it out for you. But the key thing, I think, for you is to get this recording of this show, and you get to the place where we spoke about this, and, pause and go and pause and go and make your notes on everything that I said and then follow that up. Give up the next 3 or 4 days of your life to total focus on, wake up in the morning and go to sleep at the end of the day with doing nothing but studying and getting as much as you can into this, seeing the process, looking at the framework of what we've written up. You'll see the framework is very simple, okay? And again, I can give you a little bit of help. I haven't got too much time, but if you give me a call, once you get all a little educated and get to the point where you've written your own paper, you can share with me, and I'll help you clean it up and make sure it's done good and try to help you perfect that paper. That'll give you the additional time you're looking for, and then the next paper will hopefully be around soon, and you'll be able to execute that one.
John, the number for Luna Lisa to call, is this the number you called in on, or is there another number?
Yeah, this is the number. The number I called in on, you can give to her.
Yeah, right. Okay, I just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
Right. Okay. Nice to hear you from you, Luna Lisa. Was that beneficial to you?
I don't know.
It's overwhelming, I know, but I want to tell you one thing. You know,
my
it's like anything.
My computer's dying. My USB. I don't have one. I don't know how to use one. I don't have a neighbor next to me that can show me this.
Right. Well, we can only help you so much. So, but you know, yeah, find somebody that has a printer. Well, has a computer that you can get. Well, you got a computer, right?
Yeah, but it's in bad shape. I can't even get into my security anymore.
All right, well, you're going to have to try to fix that up. You can get a refurbished laptop for a couple of $100 at Tiger Direct, literally for like $220 or something, you know?
I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah. That's okay.
But thank you.
All right.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get some more help for you.
Yeah,
I hope
I'm talking
to help you. Okay.
Great.
Well, nice hearing from you, and I hope that was of value to you.
Yes,
yeah,
I will be studying.
Appreciate. Yeah, I appreciate the call, too. And like I said, you know, let me just finish this one point. This is not really rocket scientists. When you're hearing these things for the first time, you know, it sounds like it's overwhelming. But after you listen to this a few times and you listen to other things, all of a sudden it becomes old hat like anything else in life. You know, a baby, when they're learning to talk, you don't sit down and go through sounds and stuff. You just talk to the baby, and you have a relationship with that baby, and all of a sudden, at some point in time, they spurt out a word, and they get a reaction, and everybody's all happy about it, and they're looking for another word. Next thing you know, they're stringing words together, and they pick it all up. Well, this is a language like anything else, and just immerse yourself into it, and just by osmosis, you'll pick all this stuff up. Everything I'm talking about, I've pulled in by through osmosis. I just listen into tapes and reading and just sucking it in. I don't try to remember anything. I just try to understand whatever it is I'm looking at. Next thing you know, you never know what's going to spill out of his mouth, and it comes out the way it does.
Right. Okay. Thanks for that, John, and thanks for that, Luna Lisa. Very interesting that was. Right, we'll move on to the next question, which is, John, if I got this right, you said there were no sheriffs in New York State or New York. Does this also mean there are no sheriffs in D.C., as it's not a state?
Well, I'm not sure about D.C. I don't think there are sheriffs in D.C., but we have sheriffs in New York. We have seven counties. The five boroughs of New York have no sheriff. Westchester County has no sheriff, and Nassau County has no sheriff. Other than that, the rest of the counties, about 57 of them, I guess it is, something like that, we do have sheriffs. Connecticut has no sheriffs. They lost their sheriff about 10, 12 years ago. But that's an attack upon the people, because that means they have no police authority in their state whatsoever. You know, the only authority in America is ultimately the sheriffs, the marshals, and I got to say the FBI, I think, too, has authority, but not in the state. They have authority if the state allows them in, but you know, if the sheriff allows them in. The sheriff doesn't want them here, you can kick them out. But they, you know, they should be worked with, of course, because they're working interstate, and sheriffs should work with them. And the sheriff, you know, the FBI really was a good police force, a federal police force, and they've lost control. But they had a lot of good people, and they've taken over the FBI little by little. But there are still some good FBI agents out there. I know, I can tell you firsthand.
Yes. Right, on we go. This person lives in a county that doesn't have a coordinator and don't know enough yet to do the job. Does John have any suggestions on a way to move forward with this?
Yeah, well, in the counties we call them organizers, and then we have a coordinator, which is the state. And so look for a state coordinator by going to contacts, and when you highlight the contacts, you'll get a drop-down box, and one of the items is state coordinator. And so click on that, look up your state, and then call that person and plug in with them. and they'll assist you and work with you and become an organizer within that county. The only requirement is the ability to speak and try to convince people to come on board. That's it. And then you're just an organizer. You're organizing things together. And the same thing with the coordinator. The coordinator, for the state coordinator, is to work with all the organizers and to make sure they stay busy, get them to the Monday night meetings. We have Monday night meetings every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just go on our page, click on the Monday call, top left side, and it'll give you all the information to find us. And we do an open forum every Monday night. We usually spend an hour sort of updating people, briefing people, a monologue, whatever you want to call it. And then we spend a good 2 hours on Q&A. And people can get a lot of information during the time period and be caught up to date. But we got to be active. And also called, you'll find counties next door to you. Give a call to those organizers, you know, because we're all supposed to be working together. Every organizer in every county should know the other organizers in the other counties, and you should be meeting once a week, you know, on free conference calling HD, which is the best program I've seen out there so far as a conference call is concerned. But you get that, and you could be talking once a week with everybody. Spend 15 minutes or an hour. Do it on a Saturday morning or sometime Tuesday evening or something. But just get together talking and planning. And the key thing right now is studying and getting your county constituted. Even if you don't file it, get it constituted and continue to study, work with the other counties, and then eventually you file together as a group. And you got to work as a group. Only the people can save America, and we the people have got to stand up together all at the same time across this nation. And at this point, it looks like eventually around the world.
Yes. Right. This person would like to get hold of a bunch of flyers to get the word out about the common law grand jury. Would you recommend this kind of action, and is there a profile for such a thing?
Well, absolutely. Flyers are good. And if you go out to Jurist, now you won't see the Jurist tab unless you register. But once you're registered, there's a Jurist tab that shows up on the far right. And you go to Jurist Documents, and I think we have two different flyers up there to people can print and hand out. You can make your own, you know. You can study this yourself a little bit, and maybe you can word it better. That's fine. Just get the word out. You know, the key thing is this. It's very difficult to explain this to people in a conversation because the conversation goes back and forth, and what you need is you need them to listen to you for a half hour or so without any interruption. So the best thing to do is get them to the front page, read the front page. They'll see exactly where we're coming from. Watch the video, and good chances are they're coming in. So that's the job. Get them to the front page, nationalliberty.org.
What has been the reaction among the judges that you have heard about regarding the idea of grand juries? Do they think they are illegal or unconstitutional?
Well, they are in absolute fear and trembling. There's no doubt. They will not talk with us. They won't go near us. They hide in their office. I think they crawl under their desks. I really do believe that.
Yeah.
We know the judges are in their office, and we go, and then the clerk will call up, hey, these guys are coming over. We presume she's making the call because they meet us at the door before we can get our hand onto the doorknob. This guy's opening the door, and he's coming out to us and closing the door behind her. Oh, the judge ain't here today. But I will tell you one thing, okay? We know that their fear, because first of all, they've done the FBI thing, and that didn't work 3 times. They wrote one or two letters, which was the biggest mistakes they ever could made, because they put their crime on paper. And they cannot answer any of our questions. And when we do go in to these people, we meet their law clerks, we meet their clerks, and everybody, literally, I've never seen anything like this before in my life, fumbling, stumbling, loss of words. They are frightened to death. So we need to take opportunity of that. And once I see them stumbling, especially if they're going to be a roadblock to me, then I start to badger them. And then they really lose it. They don't know what to do or say. And they're literally moving their lips and no words are coming out. This is not, I'm serious. This is exactly what's taking control, happening. you know, before we were doing this, we'd go into an office to talk to people, and boy, did they rip into us up and down, telling us, saying, these people are mean and nasty, okay? And but now, everything's turned. And we're not mean and nasty to them, but we ask questions, and I want answers. You know, I ask them, did you get on the phone? Did you talk with that judge? Have you been conspiring? What have you guys been, how many people have gotten together? You know, they can't answer anything. They don't know what to do.
No.
So we're in a good place.
Yes. Right. This person wants to know what you meant by the court being a foreign entity. Is it because they are a corporation?
Well, yeah. When you walk into a courtroom, and remember the Constitution of the United States, Article 6, Clause 2, which is the Supremacy Clause, requires that all judges and all courts proceed accordingly. They must obey all the laws of the United States, and they must obey the Constitution. Anything repugnant to that Constitution is null and void. And the Constitution requires a common law court. The Fifth Amendment requires that the people be the tribunal of that common law court. The Fifth, the Sixth, and the Seventh all require that, and it's a procedure. And so that must be the way it is. So when you walk into, and in New York and probably most states, I've seen a lot of states that agree on this, in New York you can find where it says that all courts in New York are courts of record. And now when you look at the definition of a court of record is a court process that proceeds according to the common law, okay? And so when you walk into a court, you're walking into a nisi prius court. It's a court of equity, okay, where the judge, who should be a justice, is actually a chancellor, okay? And you're walking into a chancery court. And you have to understand that. So that's a foreign court. I don't belong there. That court doesn't belong there. But they imported this court into that courtroom through the corporation that laid itself over the true trust, the common law trust, and it's been a hijack. They hijacked the common law trust into a corporation and all of the facilities. So when you walk, the other thing is these judges still, and all the people that are elected, they still take their oath to the Constitution. And so when they operate under corporate charter, and you come in there, that's exactly what they're operating under. It's called statutes and codes. It's corporate charter, which is identified to, you know, this is stuff to control your behavior, to control you. But when you walk in there and they start talking, using statutes and procedures in on codes and different things like that, and if you don't object, then you're in their court. And that is a foreign court. It's a nisi prius court, is a court not of record. They have no authority or power to incarcerate or fine you. They can't do it. They have no authority or power at all. But once you, if you don't object, you acquiesce, and therefore you're giving them authority. If you're being brought in there on a crime, and you say, and you make a plea, then you've consented. You've went forward. You can't go in there with a lawyer because that's consent. You can't go in there and proceed according to their process because that's consent. That's why first order of business, judge, I open this case up. I'm the plaintiff. I'm the sovereign of the court, and here's my paper. It says I'm one of the people of New York, and in this court of record, I'm suing A, B, and C for this, that, and the other thing. And so I'm the sovereign. I'm the plaintiff, and I just called for it, a court of record. A court of record defined on page 2 or 3 is a court that proceeds according to common law. And now that's my only argument. We're going nowhere else. We're not talking about anything until I get the words out of that judge's mouth that, yes, it's a court of record, and we'll proceed accordingly. Okay, fine. Everybody can go home now because this whole process here is an illegal process, and there's nothing to be talked about. Let's go home, and we'll get ready for trial.
Yes.
And you got to take control. If you don't steamroll them back, they're going to steamroll you. I've learned over the years that you have to immediately go for the jugular. They get mercy once. The day I walk into court, they get mercy if they cooperate. They don't cooperate, mercy's off the table now. Everybody's getting their heads chopped off because you got to sue them all.
Yeah, they don't show us any mercy.
No.
It's,
well, if they back off and leave you alone, hey, I'm good with that. You know?
Right. Someone wants to ask about the well-regulated militia again in a different format. I believe the question regarding the well-regulated militia needs to be asked again. John has mentioned in a previous show that our armories are gone and that we need the militias back again. I believe he's talking about the pre-Dick Act well-regulated militia of the several states. They would therefore be the first to approach, not the last. When does John expect we will be able to reinstate the well-regulated militia of the several states?
Well, I believe as soon as we take the courts back, which in New York, once we get access into the court, we will move through New York State very quickly. Within 30 days, I think we can pretty much pull the court, the sheriff, and the prosecutor under control and be pursuing the governor and the assembly and the Senate to talk with those people. But basically, the key one is the sheriff. And the sheriff is the guy that needs to understand what the Constitution is all about. And he's only got one choice because, you see, you ask him a few questions and you realize he doesn't know anything. So look at, you know, when you raised your hand up there, sheriff, and you swore to obey the Constitution, you do realize you lied on not only to yourself but also to the people because you don't know what the Constitution is. Now, we have to do this humbly and nice, but you got to get the point out. And so, therefore, you have two choices, okay? You can resign your office right this minute, and we'll go look for another sheriff, or you can bone up on the Constitution, and we're willing to teach you. We can meet you every morning. We can meet you down in this coffee shop at 9 o'clock, and let's sit and talk for an hour. And during the day, you should be boning up and learning about this stuff. Here's my phone number. Give me a call if you have any questions, and let's go forward with this thing. But the thing is we got to teach these guys what the Constitution is. We have to make sure that they understand that we're in very dangerous times and that it is their job to protect the people of the county. And so, therefore, and if they need help, all they have to do is give us a jingle, and we know all the Liberty Group people. We'll meet them anywhere they want us to meet them. If they want to deputize us for some reason in an emergency, we'll do whatever has to be done under his command. Because, you see, that's the safety right now. That's an authority everybody understands, so that's good for now. But the bottom line, in a state of an emergency, the sheriff has to secure all of the resources of the county and make sure it stays within the county to take care of the people of the county. Any surplus can then flow out to the other counties around us and eventually to the other states, as all other counties should be doing. And if we're all doing that, we're going to be good even in an emergency for food and supplies and moving things around that's necessary and so on. But the key thing is that they've closed our armories down. We have to reopen them. They've almost made them outlawed, militia outlawed in New York, and we do have some militia here or there, but it's few and far and in between. Well, we need each sheriff to be talking and thinking about the militia, and we'll get the volunteers to them, and he needs to run the militia at least for a period of time until he can then turn it back to the people. It just seems that in this day and age, with the problems we have and the things that they claim everybody's a terrorist, it just seems to be the safe and wise thing to do is to hand that authority to the sheriff temporarily. And once that militia is up and going in that county and it's strong and they can work together with the sheriff, then they could break away and control themselves the way they should anyway, because it should be a separate entity from the sheriff. The only way to get our armories back is to go and talk with the Assembly and the Senate and demand, the Constitution. I think it's in the Constitution. I think it's in preamble. Trying to think where it is. It's definitely in the Constitution where it says that in order for the security of the state to be secure, I'm paraphrasing, a well-regulated militia is necessary. Matter of fact, it's in the Bill of Rights, I believe, in the Second Amendment. I think it does word it some similar way like that. So, it's a necessity for a free state. Without it, you can't have it.
Right. Next question. Somebody noticed on the common law grand jury files against the state of New York Supreme Court that in the filing, some of the continuing documentation, there were a few instances of misspellings, omitted punctuations, mm-hmm. and incorrect word usage. Do right. these errors have an effect on the legal viability of the documents?
Well, no. The incorrect word usage may not be an incorrect word usage at all, because it's just the way some of these people, the way talk goes in law. So it may appear to be strange or incorrectly used, but no, that is not the case. There could be some spelling errors, no doubt about that. We do have people who check this, but we often miss things here or there. But look, these people can't even read third grade stuff.
Sometimes, John, there's a difference between the British spelling and the American spelling of English. And sometimes you have to use the British spellings in law.
Absolutely.
So that may explain what they perceive as misspellings when actually it's not.
Well, we do have, I know we have at least two or three words in there that probably were misspelled, but people know what the words are anyway. They misspell everything. They don't have punctuation. They write like third graders, and they can't even respond to our stuff. But a lot of the misspelling or the strange language you'll see in quotes, and maybe you don't realize they're quotes, and we won't change a quote. I mean, you can look at a lot of Jefferson stuff. They spell things differently, and I guess it's the old English. And and they said things strangely, but they really, even though it's strange, when you look at it, it's said in a way to make it precise and specific. And so sometimes you have to speak that way.
Yes.
And by the way, I did find it. It is the Second Amendment where it says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Okay? So it's necessary for the security of a free state, a well-regulated militia, and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And how could they miss that one? I mean, you know, it's very clear to me.
Yes. Well, if you don't look, you can't see.
That's
basically what they've done to us.
Yes.
John, can you rescind your consent if you are already involved in a court case?
Oh, absolutely. We have people who have already done 6 years in jail and been out a couple of years, and now they're rescinding it, and they're going to go back and get every penny back and a whole bunch of money for being in there. Look at whatever you. Here's the key thing. In common law, there is no statute of limitation because there are no statutes. So you could bring a case up any time. Once a case is completed, it's completed and done with. But if fraud was involved, well, that case was no case at all. The whole thing is built upon fraud. You go back in on fraud on the case. Anything could be real.
This may apply where I think perhaps it's not worded very well, the question, but it may come into the person having contracted to go into the court case, and can they rescind their contract?
Absolutely, because the whole thing was a fraud. The court is a fiction.
Yes.
It's not real. It's a foreign court. It has nothing to do with common law, and that's a fraud. If fraud is fraud, and it doesn't matter. And even if you comply because of fear, or you comply because you're trying to get the unless you don't, you're going to get a real big. Look, we have a guy that's five. He's going to get 15 years or 5 days, and it was 5 days time served. Okay, that's what they offered him. He already was in jail for 5 days, and they really want to get rid of this guy because we're blowing the doors off this courthouse. And so they offered him 15, you know, they're going after him for 15 years, but they'll live with the five days. And he denied. He said, I'm not guilty. I'm not going to take nothing. So now they're chasing, trying to put him into jail for 15 years. And right there, you could see fraud right on his face. 5 days, 15 years, they're going to give him, you know, there's something wrong. That's pressure. But, yeah, you can agree to anything and tomorrow discover that you've been burnt, discover that you've been defrauded, and now you can go fix it. Get remedy. You've been injured. It's a wrongdoing.
Well, I think this was a very interesting show. And once again, I thank you for coming on and giving your time to us, John.
Thanks for having us.
Do you want to spend the next minute and go over something? Or?
Well, not particularly, but I would like to maybe read something real quick. It's a Jefferson quote. Let me give him a biblical quote instead. You know, the Bible is a common law document. We get our law from the Bible. And let me see on this page here we have on the bottom. Yeah, it's Proverbs 4:1-7. Hear ye children the instructions of a father, and attend to the no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. Forsake ye not my law. For I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all thy getting, get understanding. And if we don't get understanding, we're not going to save our nation. So as Jefferson said, if you expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to work. NationalLibertyAlliance.org and get reeducated. Thank you.
Hey, yes. You know, there's also another biblical quote that needs to be thrown in here. It's Hosea 4:6. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge.
Amen. Good one. I like
if that don't if that don't cut it for anybody, that's knowledge. That knowledge is an all-inclusive term. You got to get into your ancient Hebrew and ancient Greek and Eastern Aramaic and look it up. It says exactly that. Exactly verbatim, exactly what it states. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. And you got to know what you're doing in order to be able to be free. You got to know what that freedom is. One of the places to do that is on this website. National Liberty Alliance carries a whole lot of the things that I have mentioned on shows. It carries a whole lot of the format and procedures required so that you don't screw it up. You don't know it, but these people do, and it's written down for you. So, you know, if you ain't got a printer, is there a library around? If you need help, does a neighbor got a printer that works? If you need some assistance with understanding this stuff, ask somebody. Now, beware. You're going to have objectionists. I've run across them. We get a whole bunch of traffic on this through our websites and whatnot. You would not believe the comments, but basically this. You have the correct way of doing things, the correct format, the correct procedure, the correct manner in which you make a presentment, no matter what it may be or dealing with. And here's the crux. You have people who will say, well, if you put thee in there and thou, it screws the document. Oops. You're going to have a lot of what has been termed freedomizers. Oh, they'd love to interject this, that, and other things that have nothing to do with the subject at hand. You got to watch these people. Don't worry about it. If that comes up, let us know. You can get in touch with John, either that or someone through the website, one of us. There's several of us that can help with that. It's not difficult. Just remember, it's only that you're dealing with uneducated systems. This system is educated in statute. It's educated, and its procedures and its rulings abide by those codes, regulations, and other BS that has nothing to do with the fourth branch of government. The fourth branch of government is the silent one that never has come to the foreground before. Believe me, I've been hearing, and I'm in a position to hear from a lot of people. And
less
really,
than a minute,
really
break.
Scared. They are worried to death that everything they got is going to be upchucked, turned upside down, that they're going to be out in the lurch, and that's basically the case. Now, a lot of this goes to, oh, we're not going to worry what you did in the past. Well, that depends on how many people you killed, lives you ruined, and the costs involved. Some of the people, their past will come up. This I guarantee. I've already been told this. So
no doubt about
the
that.
People that now are going to try to help, I'm talking about people in position to do so, are beginning to study this. And I'm just so grateful that John and some other people took the time out of their lives, their sweat, blood, tears, whatever, to do this. And I thank you, John.
All right. All right. Thanks, John, and thanks, Drake. No time for the music on this show. I hope you all enjoyed it. And once again, condolences to Rick and Robin. We're with you. Bye for now.
Thank you. Good night.